This episode of the YVR Screen Scene podcast is brought to you by Fish Flight Entertainment.
This episode was sponsored in part by listeners like you. Join our Patreon community and receive early access to episodes, bonus content, stickers, buttons, and more. Visit www.patreon.com/YVRScreenScenePodcast.
Welcome to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast, where we pull back the curtain on the Vancouver film and television industry and celebrate its beating heart, namely the actors and filmmakers and other talented artists who do the work. Capital T, capital W. I'm Sabrina Rani Firminger. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to welcome Jamila Pomeroy to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast. Jamila is the force behind Union Street, an award-winning feature documentary that was an official 2023 selection at the Vancouver International Film Festival and the 2023 Real World Film Festival, where she won Outstanding Director for a Feature Film. And did I mention that this was her debut documentary feature? I did not. Well, I am now. Union Street is Jamila's debut documentary feature. And this remarkable feat of documentary storytelling is now available on TELUS Originals and TELUS Optik TV. Union Street chronicles the ongoing effects of racism, displacement, and the cultural erasure of African Canadians, while examining the systemic and political mechanisms that destroyed Hogan's Alley in the 1960s. Vancouver's historic Black community for almost a century is brought back into the spotlight. Train porters, speakeasies, juke joints, and a thriving community all existed in the Black neighborhood. And so did musicians like Jimi Hendrix, Louis Armstrong, and Ella Fitzgerald. The reverberations of this thriving community and its erasure are still felt. And in the face of adversity, a new generation of Black Vancouverites work to rebuild community and facilitate Black joy as they reclaim cultural space and give voice to Black experiences in Vancouver. They also redefine what it means to be African Canadian. Union Street elevates and amplifies the voices of people who have decided to create their own spaces for themselves and reject the white supremacist system upon which the traditional structures of so-called mainstream society have been built. It examines how community spaces can help people heal from racism-related trauma, which is especially important in a city where the powers that be didn't want you and actively worked to erase you. As one of Union Street's interview subjects, Pearl Lowe, says in the film, "It's hard to exist in a space where you don't see yourself reflected. And it almost feels like imposter syndrome every day when you're walking through a city that was intentionally trying to tear down a space that did exist for you at a certain point in time." Union Street looks at the past and the present with a keen eye on the future. I am honored to have Jamila Pomeroy here with us today to talk about the past, present, and future of Union Street. Jamila Pomeroy, welcome to the YVR Screen Scene Podcast.
Thank you so much. Oh my goodness, what a beautiful welcoming. Thank you so much.
Well, what a beautiful film. For people outside of Vancouver, and honestly, for people who live here too, what was and what is Union Street? Tell us about the history of the Black community in Vancouver.
Yeah, so the Black community was first started by the train porters who originally came to Vancouver, and after some time developed into quite a thriving Black neighborhood. A lot of people refer to the Black neighborhood or Strathcona or Black Strathcona or historic Black Vancouver as Hogan's Alley. Mm. Hogan's Alley was a part of historic Black Strathcona, where, you know, you had lots and lots of vibrant people and businesses and musicians and restaurants. And, you know, there were also a lot of speakeasies and sort of, you know, different alternative styles of business that had popped up due to just, you know, some of the laws that were in place in Vancouver and Canada at the time. But overall, it was a very vibrant community, so much so that we had people coming up from the States, lots of notable musicians like, you know, Ella Fitzgerald, Billie Holiday, Louis Armstrong, coming right into Vancouver, specifically to the Black community to play music. I think that a lot of people don't know about this history.
Well, because it sounds amazing, Jamila. I want to go there right now. What can I go there right now?
Well, it's and unfortunately, due to a lot of racist city planning, and a very deliberate effort by the government of Canada and organizations such as the Canadian Mortgage and Housing Corporation, made a very big effort to just completely destroy the community.
Literally.
Yeah, completely destroy it. So right now, Hogan's Alley and historic Black Strathcona is more of a memory. We have landmarks throughout that geographical area. But what resulted in, resulted from this erasure was just for the community to spread out and disperse throughout the GVRD and even back into the States. A lot of Black Canadians, the 1920s up into the 60s, really realized that Vancouver and Canada wasn't actually the safe haven that they were sold for those folks who had come up from the States during or post transatlantic slave trade. So there's definitely a lot of history, a lot of nuance. But with the film, what we're really doing is taking that history and using it as a springboard to showcase how the new generation of Black Canadians and people within the Vancouver Black community are still facing a lot of these challenges to this day. And, you know, this isn't actually a very, very far, far in the past history. You know, we're talking of right up until the 70s, a lot of these things were happening in the city. We just really wanted to shed light and embolden these issues so that, you know, we can make change and history doesn't repeat itself.
That was one of the things I thought was so beautiful about your documentary, because I definitely went in not knowing what to expect. I think I thought it was a history piece. And I'm like, okay, great, because I love a history film. I'm going to sit down and watch, you know, an hour about like the history of Hogan's Alley. The beauty of your film, I think, is that, yes, we do get that history, but then we also see, I mean, most of your film, I think what you said, 70% of your film is in the present, and it looks at the Black community in Vancouver today. And yes, there's a Black community in Vancouver. Maybe they don't have that area in the same way, because literally, when we talk about destroying or erasure, they literally knock down buildings, and then they I don't know how much more destructive, you know, you could be. It's not we're not talking in metaphors. They knock down buildings, and people had to go elsewhere. But, you know, can you tell us about, you know, about tell us about what's going on now? You know, tell us about, you know, Vancouver's Black community today, and what you learned about it, you know, as you kind of delved into it in your film.
Well, I think something really beautiful is happening, and I think we're on the cusp of some real change in the city. What we're seeing now is a lot of Black business owners coming back into the old neighborhood and taking up space. You know, folks like Roger Collins, who is a co-owner of Rise Up Marketplace, is quite literally in historic Black Strathcona, which is incredible to see. He is a he's in the film, and you can see what he's doing with his store, and also Kula Kitchen is just down the street at a commissary space. So what we're seeing is this influx of people coming back into the community, which is amazing. And then on the city planning side and on the activism side, I think we're seeing this merge of multiple different pockets of the African Canadian community coming together, because, you know, with white supremacy, I think a big part in what makes how we as a society can uphold white supremacy is creating division within the community, that physical separation. So, you know, not allowing Black folks to congregate together, African Canadians to congregate together, and in creating that, you know, physical division and social division, where, you know, we're pointing fingers at each other for various different reasons. I think there's been this just general acknowledgement of, you know, we can't be divided within the community. We have to come together. And now is the time to enact this change over many different African Canadian experiences, because, you know, I think quite often we think of the Black experience as this big monolithic experience. You know, it's the kind of Black experience you see on TV. It's a very actually Black American experience. But our history and the culture in Canada is completely different. And so I think, you know, in showcasing just the multiplicity of experiences and different intersections, having people who are new immigrants, having people who have been here maybe, you know, 5-6 generations, having, you know, folks who are maybe born of immigrant parents, people who are biracial, people who have multi-ethnicities. There are so many voices to, you know, contribute to the conversation. Yeah, and I think that was something I really wanted to evoke within the film too, is showcasing these many different experiences and how to tackle it.
Yeah, and there are many different ways to be a quote-unquote Canadian, you know, as well. Like, I think for the longest time, white Canadians, you know, had this idea of assimilation. Like, they expected a certain kind of assimilation from, you know, people of color, immigrant communities. One of the things that we've talked a lot about here on this podcast is this idea of that for certain people of color, we will never be able to assimilate enough. And that is not to be acceptable to, you know, the white establishment, you know.
Absolutely.
And that it's it costs too much to assimilate, giving up our cultural heritage, giving up who we are, rejecting, you know. So it's really beautiful to see the people in your film, you know, who are doing all sorts, starting businesses, bringing people together, you know, and being like, yes, this is what it means to be African Canadian, you know, Black Vancouverite. Like, and it does, it looks like so many different kinds of experiences, because we contain multitudes. You don't have to just, like, you know, put on some plaid and go to Tim Hortons. Like, I guess those are the stereotypes of, yeah, of assimilation in white Canada, right? I'd love to hear about some of your memorable moments from filming, you know, because even watching your film, there are moments where you're filming with, you know, the gentleman who has the snack counter, and he's literally still, like, serving people, like, while he's doing interviews and stuff. Could tell me about some of, like, the richness of the experiences that you had, you know, over the course of making this film.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think, you know, I started my writing career as a journalist. So I've been, you know, I'm quite new in the film industry, but I've been writing for a little over a decade. So coming from the journalism space, I think I've always been really interested in doing profiles on people and interviewing people and really showcasing who they are authentically and trying to just get the most authentic version of them in a story. And I really wanted that to translate into my filmmaking as well. So I, you know, through the pre-interview process, I told people, you know, I'd love to just, like, I just want to have like a snippet of what it's like to be you, or what you do on a daily basis. And I, like, don't feel the need to filter yourself. I think if any film would allow for you to be exactly who you are and for that to be just perfect, this is the film. So I listened to what people were doing and really kind of had that slice of life visual and conversational style. I also think, especially when it comes to Roger, it adds a comedic tone to what we're talking about. You know, we're having a conversation and a customer comes, he's like, okay, well, I gotta go get that. I'll be right back. And yeah, because I think too, it's, you know, as a documentarian, I think it's important to let people do their thing and us be a vehicle for them to tell their story rather than building a story around a person with our lens.
Mm-hmm. What kind of challenges? I love talking about challenges, by the way. It's like one of my favorite things, especially when I'm faced with this beautiful documentary that I will carry in my bones, you know, for a long time. But what kind of challenges did you face either during filming or, you know, in the post-production process? And how did you overcome those challenges?
Yeah, well, I think I wanted to have a completely different ending than what we have today. I had, you know, I'd done a paper edit. I had a general idea of what the film was going to look like. I had all of my interview questions for everybody. And my biggest hope was to have this beautiful block party in the historic neighborhood, just with people from the entire community, you know, from the Black community, from all other different cultural communities, and really have this moment to celebrate a new chapter in the neighborhood. But I mean, it's kind of funny because we experienced just trying to get block party permitting, which is something different than you know, film permits. Mm-hmm. There's your film permits and then there's your event permits, and we weren't able to get a permit. The city denied us getting a permit to do this block party because the current permitting process for the block parties in the city of Vancouver is that you have to have a owner of property apply for the block party. And just because of quite literally what happened in the neighborhood and just the fact being most of the Black community that are in the neighborhood are renters, not owners. We weren't able to get anyone in the neighborhood who was willing to do this on our behalf because we, as the filmmakers and producers, couldn't do it. I live in the neighborhood, but I'm not in the exact, like, you have to be within like a 3-block radius. I'm within a five block radius of where we wanted to do it. Like, it was just all of these, there were just all of these barriers. So at the end of the day, like I at one point went around and quite literally knocking on people's doors saying like, hi, like I live in the neighborhood. I'm trying to do this block party for the Black community. Everyone's invited. I'm making this film. This is what I'm doing. And not a single person who I spoke to was willing to, willing to help make that happen, which is really disheartening and frustrating because, you know, now we're seeing, there's a whole new generation of property owners in the community now. And many of them may not know that they're in the historic Black community or the history of the area. It definitely was very sad and disheartening because that was the big ending I wanted to have. And I wanted it to be a moment for the community to really feel empowered to be back in the historic Black community and feel like that's a space for them. It just kind of goes to show these barriers are still in place. People are not at large, not willing to let the Black community in and have this fear of the Black community congregating together in spaces. So as challenging as it was, I was like, okay, well, maybe there's something there. Maybe that's, you know, the end of the film is all of our ensemble talking about the need for Black spaces and the need for dedicated, Black community organizing and the need for the public to be okay with that and not just be okay with it, but to support it. So I've had to kind of shift gears with that. And that's what we ended up doing.
That is so fascinating though, Jamila. That is so fascinating because like what it tells me, I don't know if it says the same thing to you, what it tells me is that in the system, you know, the white supremacist, you know, city of Vancouver system, nothing's changed, you know?
Yeah.
And what kind of conclusions do you draw from that?
I mean, when I talk to people at the city, I explain the situation and the film that I was making and that, you know, maybe this is how it's been. Would they be willing to make any exceptions? Like knowing that this would be a moment in the film to help celebrate the new generation and the new chapter in the community. And there was just no entertaining it. They're just, no, this is how we do it. This is how we've always done it. And was just kind of shut out of the conversation. And then ghosted and thought, okay, well, I guess this is it. I think it just as a resident too, it definitely makes me feel unwelcomed in the neighborhood. And it was this weird experience of like, okay, well, I'm trying to make this film about people who are coming back to the neighborhood and taking up space, and like I don't even feel like I have that. I really don't feel like I have that, but I think it also added just more of a drive for me to make impact with the film because it was so obvious that we were in more or less the same situation that we were in the 1920s.
I want to go back to talking about the people that you feature in your documentary, both, you know, people who are, you know, contemporary, present day, modern day Vancouver, as well as people, you know, who were displaced, you know, whose homes were destroyed by the city. What kind of responsibility did you feel towards them? The people past and present whose voices you feature.
I felt just such a great responsibility. And I think one of my biggest challenges with the film was how do I honor a community that I'd never met and that I will never meet because they were displaced. And I mean, there are still a few families from few descendants from the original neighborhood that live in the city. But by large, the community is not present and is not together. So I think that was a big question mark for me in the 2 years of development was how can I best honor them, and also recognizing that, you know, yeah, I do not have historical lineage tied to that community. You know, my ethnicity is Kenyan Canadian. My dad immigrated to Canada as a refugee from Kenya. So I have a very different experience than someone whose family maybe have been here since the original Black train porters. So for me, it was really about how do I merge this historical experience with all of these different experiences? And I think, you know, I talked to some of the original members of the community and also some other families who lived in North Van at the time or who had moved out of Strathcona to other places just to kind of get a sense. I think there's a lot of pain associated with things like this, and it's a very tough subject. And for me, I didn't want to be putting people in a position where they're just talking about their pain and trauma on camera as historical evidence, because I think we have the historical evidence without having to unearth those feelings and relive those experiences. And I think it's so common in the documentary space to there's a tendency, especially within the BIPOC communities, to showcase this Black trauma on screen and to have people like there's this belief in our society that you need to have somebody on camera crying about something tragic that happened or having this big emotional response to tragedy. And I don't like, I think there's already been a documentary, like a documentary short about Hogan's Alley. Mm-hmm. They, you know, some of the descendants are part of that documentary. They, you know, they've touched on this, and it just felt inappropriate for me to dig even deeper when we know that these are true events that happened. We have city records, we have archival footage. So I had to think a lot about how I wanted to display that. And I think ultimately using archival that was available, working closely with historian Josh Tecumseh Robinson as well, who's done an incredible amount of work in the city, is a founding member of Hogan's Alley Society, also an incredible curator. He has been doing this work also for a very long time. So for me, it was using archival, using these existing real accounts of things that happened that have been reported on already by the community. I also visually really wanted to honor just the neighborhood. There's a lot of beautiful homes in the neighborhood, and I've gone through, like, I live in the neighborhood, so I've gone through so many different walks and just wondered, you know, I wonder who lived in this house. Okay, this was built by a Black Canadian. I wonder who that was. I wonder who, like, I could just kind of envision these families living in these old, beautiful historic homes. I think that was a big visual component of the film, was having these neighborhood shots of these beautiful homes, and hopefully provoked the viewers to want to go to the neighborhood and explore for themselves. It was like bringing people on like an exploratory walk through the neighborhood.
I mean, as a viewer, that is something I absolutely wanted to do, was to head over there and explore. Union Street screened at the 2023 Vancouver International Film Festival. Congratulations, by the way, and congratulations on all the things. Like, you know, congratulations on your film, and also, like, you know, the acclaim that it has received, you know, as well, and the opportunities to be seen. It's all well deserved. But that screening, that hometown, you know, Vancouver screening at our big festival, what was some of the feedback that you received, you know, from that screening, those screenings? I'm assuming there was more than one, that you most cherish. And was there anything in the feedback that you received that was a surprise to you?
Yeah, I think what we really wanted to do a hometown premiere, just because it felt like the right thing to do. It felt like, you know, a way where we could make a big wave right away and have people from the community be able to start that dialogue. And then hopefully other people would join in. We started with, we were programmed for two screenings at VIFF initially. The first screening, I remember I had gotten there really early. I was, you know, it's my first premiere, it's my debut feature. I was very nervous and kind of just, I got there early, went to the theater and, you know, picked out a seat to sit down before the crowd came in. Cause I was just like, I'm like, I don't want to see anybody. I just want to, you know, go there and hopefully we get a good reaction. But a friend of mine came up to me and was like, oh my goodness, I was waiting in the wrong line. Have you seen the line outside? And I was like, oh, what do you mean? And they show me this line of people all the way around the block and, you know, like around a corner. Wow. And I was just shook. I was so shocked and surprised. And she was like, yeah, that's the standby line. Those are people who don't have tickets for the film who are trying to get in. And I remember just, in that moment, realizing, oh, this is, I think that this has become bigger than me and bigger than this film. And I think I started to realize what the impact of this film would be. If from there, you know, we sold out those few original screenings, and then Viff would add another one and that would get sold out, and then they would add another one and it would get wow. sold out. And it was, yeah, it was sold out across the board. And just every time I was just blown away by the response, and just really, honestly, really humbled too, just to have an experience where, like, I think Vancouver is notorious for not celebrating people who are from Vancouver. We like to celebrate people who are, you know, from Vancouver, who make it big somewhere else and then come yeah. back. So I wasn't really expecting that kind of response. And I was kind of told throughout the submission process, like, okay, we can't get our hopes up, like, hopefully we get into a festival. So to have our premiere just be such a big hit like that, like, we had no PR on board, everything was grassroots. So yeah, just overwhelmingly incredible, very humbling and beautiful, joyful experience. Yeah, I think overall, the community support, like, throughout the festival and just overall has been just so vast and amazing and beautiful. And yeah, I think the dialogue that it has created or evoked has just really blown me away, and being able to see just little bits of change already in the community has been amazing.
What kind of change? What do you mean?
Well, I actually just went for lunch at Rise Up yesterday, because Roger, the owner, messaged me and was like, okay, you got to come for lunch. Like, I have to say thank you. And I was like, what do you mean? And he said, I have multiple people coming into the store every single day telling me, oh my goodness, I just watched Union Street. I saw you in Union Street. I know you, you're Roger Collins. And, you know, what can I do to, like, you know, coming in, grabbing a patty, grabbing, you know, stuff in their marketplace, asking Roger to forward them to other Black businesses in the area, and asking, okay, how can I support your business? How can I support other Black businesses?
Wow.
So to be in a situation like that, where somebody in the film is like, wow, my business is just popping off.
You're building community. You are part of building Union Street.
Well, it's just, and it's wild, because I don't think I really realized I had hoped that would happen when making the film, but it's hard to fully believe something's going to happen when you haven't seen it.
Yeah.
So yeah, being able to hear that, and we were in the store, and right before I arrived, apparently it happened again, where another visitor, customer had said, oh, I just watched the film last night. Like, really excited to try the Jamaican patties. Like, where can I get some, you know, jerk chicken sauce? Where do I get these spices? And while I was sitting there eating my lunch, like, a few people had walked in and said they'd seen the film. So it's crazy to me, the response in the community. I think in film festival settings and in panels and talks and whatnot, I've noticed there's two distinct responses. One being, people are very excited, they're very engaged, they want to know how they can help, they want resources, especially, you know, I've gotten lots of people in academia and in education who are like, well, how do we get this in the school system? How do we put this into a BC curriculum? How do I engage with this in my classroom? And just community members being really excited. A lot of Black community members telling me they've never felt represented in film, and you know, this was the first time they felt truly represented as an immigrant, or, you know, just really beautiful things. And then the other side of the coin is there has been some pushback. Some people, I think, have a hard time acknowledging that something bad happened in their neighborhood and they didn't know about it. And I think some, you know, I think all those, the feelings are always valid. You know, I think it can be frustrating.
Are they, Jamila?
they're
informative. They're absolutely, informative.
They're informative for sure. The way I try to tackle it is, I think feelings of frustration can be valid, because I think deep down, most people don't want a situation like what happened to the Black community to happen. I strongly believe that most people want to do the good thing, and most people want to be good people. They may just not know how to do that, or
they want to think that they're good people and they wouldn't be. Yeah. People got to learn to sit in some discomfort.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't know how to do that. And I think, you know, when you're in a situation and you're in a theater and you're told that, you know, there are people in leadership in your community who are part of the KKK, I think that makes a lot of people uncomfortable and a lot of people angry when they're told that, you know, that there are neighbors in the community who could have helped stop this from happening. So I think, yeah, there's that adverse reaction of, you know, I've heard things like, well, the Black community should have tried harder. I've heard things like, and these are audience comments. I've heard people have said to me, well, you know, the Chinese Canadian community is right next door and they did fine. So obviously, you know, the rumors of, you know, there being violence and, you know, whatever, you know, negative archetypes attached to the Black community, obviously those are valid if that's why other BIPOC communities have survived and not the Black community. And then you have to, you know, inform about, okay, well, yes, white supremacy means different things for different communities. And there's a lot of anti-Black racism in other BIPOC communities. And BIPOC is not one big community. Like, everyone who is not white is not automatically, you know, in a community. Yes, we're othered in the context of white supremacy, but we're not the same culture. So it's, yeah, just trying to, you know, be as amicable as possible and dispel some of these myths that a lot of people feel quite strongly about.
Wow. You literally had people up there talking about Chinese Canadians as the model minority.
Wow.
It's important to open your mind and learn about history. There's a lot that's there, and, you know,
and all of these things can coexist.
Yeah.
And I think all of them are different. You know, it's a really, I think we can look at the Chinese Canadian community is a great example of how we can preserve history in the city. And it's anytime I've received a lot of commentary and questions trying to put different BIPOC communities up against each other. Mm. And that, again, is a tool of white supremacy to have this disconnection and, you know, try to encourage feuds amongst Black communities or amongst BIPOC communities, rather, because when that feud is present, you can't move forward and you can't actually coexist together. So it's, you know, there's a lot of interesting, most of those comments that try and pin either people within the Black community against each other or within different BIPOC communities against each other, I've noticed have not been from BIPOC viewers. So yeah.
I sorry, I'm laughing because I'm imagining a woman. So it looks like my mom. My mom is white. My dad's brown. Woman looks like my mom, you know, blonde hair, standing up and being like, Jamila, you know, your film, It's beautiful, but you know, very like one-sided, you know, not everybody sees color. I don't see color. Like I can actually hear that kind of thing. It didn't.
And it's a weird thing, I think, too, to just be confronted with these comments, because I think social media has conditioned a culture where we don't have to think before we comment. And you can easily comment on something, and you're not actually put into a social situation where you're having dialogue with that person. And so I think it's in a way, like there's all these conversations happening on the internet, but I think in a way we've disconnected ourselves from reality because we're not having these conversations in person. And it's just, it's a strange thing to see what happens when those conversations are taken from the internet into reality, because there's a lot of uncomfortable things that happen, but then at the same time there's a lot of beautiful things to happen. So I can't I can say honestly, I've seen all spectrums of responses, but overwhelmingly it's been positive.
Well, and hopefully for those people who, you know, I want to call them Karens. You know what I mean? Everybody knows what I mean. Hopefully this is the beginning of the journey where they learn how to look at their sit in discomfort, you know, talk about race, talk about, you know, history, and that it doesn't like begin and end with them standing up at your Q&A with their arms crossed. And this was a phenomenal debut feature.
Thank you.
But
Thank you.
what does Union Street tell us, though, about the kind of work that you'll be doing in the documentary sphere moving forward?
Well, I think I really I'm really interested in making more African Canadian films, just like, and that goes to say for, the documentary space and the scripted space. I write in the scripted space as well, and I have done some directing in the scripted space as well, and I really hope to just expand that, just because I think people by large are looking for that content. People want to see themselves represented on the screen, and really up until the last few years we have not seen any African Canadian content at all. And so that's a very broad statement of wanting to create African Canadian content, but I think that's just my main goal right now. I'm working in development on my next feature right now, which I can't say too much about, but it's about the African Canadian food scene, which I'm very excited for.
Ooh.
And I think in terms of directing style, it follows a very similar but similar sort of style to Union Street, in that it is these profiles mixed with historical context, and just really beautiful imagery as well. And in the scripted space, I'm hoping to do more dramedy and comedy, and being able to, attach these what are sometimes relegated to be difficult subjects to comedy, because I think comedy is a really great way for us to laugh at the stupid things we've done as humans. And I think it's really healing and helps us move forward as a society.
Comedy as healing. I want to hear, I want to know everything that you're working on. I want you to come back and then come back again. Jamila Pomeroy, I am such a fan of your work. You know what? I have one more question for you before we wrap up today.
Let's ask away.
How would you like audiences to feel when the credits are rolling on Union Street?
I think what I wanted viewers to feel, and what I wanted audiences to feel, has really been represented in a lot of the feedback I've gotten. People have told me that they feel both so joyful and excited, but also have this, there's a lot of deep emotion associated with a lot of the topics we cover. you know, it's a systemic racism is not an easy thing to talk about. There's a lot of traumatic experiences that we talk about. But I really think the overwhelming feeling should be hopeful and joyful that we live in the space and time where we have the opportunity and ability to create a better future for not just this community, but I think for communities across the country.
I agree with you completely. You've done that for me. Jamila Pomeroy, thank you so much for being here today. Where can our listeners find you and stay up to date with what you're working on? Do you do the whole social media thing?
Absolutely. I'm j.m.pomeroy on all social media. J.M. Pomeroy on all social media. And yeah, hope to have some new announcements in the next little while. So yeah,
fantastic.
Stay up to date with that. And
important question, because I got a little bit of a preview here. On your social media feed, do we get to see photos of your dog Jujube, who is so cute and has the most beautiful little beard I've ever done see?
Yes, absolutely. Photos of Jujube for sure. He's my rescue pup from Mexico. He's very, very sweet and handsome little terrier mix. I also have a hedgehog, which makes an occasional appearance.
You have a hedgehog?
Yeah.
I went to a hedgehog cafe, not to eat or anything, in Japan, and we got to hang out with them for an hour and hold them and stuff.
They're so sweet. Yes, he's a senior citizen now. His name's Mtoto, which means like a small little baby in Swahili. He's very cute.
I wish that we had established that earlier. I would have had a lot more questions. Honestly, though, it's good that you didn't, because we would have talked just about the hedgehog and not about the film. Okay. There is Mtoto photos on your Instagram, right?
Yes. Absolutely.
Because if not, I was going to demand some. All right. I'm derailing my own show. Jamila Pomeroy, thank you so much for being here. Union Street is available for free across Canada on TELUS Originals and in British Columbia and Alberta on TELUS Optik TV. The YVR Screen Scene podcast is hosted and executive produced by me, Sabrina Ranimira Firminger. And oh, here come the Firmingers. It's edited by Simon Firminger. Special thanks to Mariana Firminger for recording our Patreon ad and to Paul Firminger for technical support. YVR Screen Scene is a division of Firminger. Oh, you all know this is my joke for the season. Not Firminger, Fish Flight Entertainment. I know it's a bad joke. Find us on all the socials at YVR Screen Scene and at Sabrinarf. And you can find lots of cat photos of Wade Wilson and Vanessa on all of those, on Apple Podcasts and wherever you listen to podcasts for free, and at our home on the web at yvrscreenscene.com. Join us next time for another deep dive into Vancouver's dynamic film and television scene. And cut it! This ad begins with a story about an important but largely forgotten piece of Hollywood North history, the Fish Flight. In the 1980s, the Fish Flight was an early morning flight from Vancouver that delivered fresh fish to Los Angeles before the start of the business day. These were the early days of Hollywood North, before digital deliveries and fast transfer speeds, and the pioneers of the Vancouver film industry began loading up the Fish Flight with film reels so Hollywood execs could review the footage shot on the previous day. The Fish Flight was also one of the building blocks of the visual effects and animation mecca that is present-day Vancouver. And Fish Flight Entertainment builds on this legacy. Fish Flight Entertainment serves the games, film, and television industries. We remember the days of the Fish Flight and attack our projects with the same passion as those pioneering days of yore. We believe in jumping off the cliff and building our wings on the way down. And who knows? That old fish with improvised wings may even fly. Learn more about Fish Flight Entertainment at fishflightentertainment.com. That's fishflightentertainment.com.